Welcome to another episode of the No Ceilings Podcast. I'm Tyler Metcalf, joined as always by the one and only Tyler Rucker. Rucker, how are we doing?
Doing fantastic. Really pumped out of my mind this time of the year. Starting to get some new legs, Metcalf, with March Madness right around the corner. So I'm excited for another episode with you, sir. How are we doing? How are we holding up?
Fantastic. Yeah, my wife is out of town with family on a destination kind of wedding. I mean, it's in Charlotte, so, you know, destination as in not here, but, you know, that just means I have the house to myself with the puppy, and well, I guess she's almost five, so not a puppy, but just basketball all weekend. Very excited, but it's a magical time of the year, so, you know, this episode we're just going to kind of keep it simple and just kind of try and target five guys a piece who we think have the most to gain from tournament season. For a lot of NBA fans, this is the first time they're tuning in to college basketball and even kind of starting to think about the NBA draft. Some evaluators place a lot of weight on this time of the year. Others, it's just kind of a piece to the puzzle. So before we really kind of dive into individual players and their situations and all of that kind of stuff and what we hope to see from some of these guys, how do you, let's just 5 minutes on philosophy stuff. How do you kind of gauge this time of the year? How do you weight it? What does it mean to you? Is it the end all be all? Does it play a major factor? What does this time of the year mean for you from an evaluation and scouting standpoint?
Yeah, we actually had a question about this from one of our fans online, and I thought it was a fantastic question. Personally, I've always said this. We've talked about this each year, but it's an important reminder. I'm one of those. I take a full slate of the whole year. I do my check-ins like you're going to the doctor, you're checking up to make sure everything's going good. And it's kind of how I view it with prospects. You know, I want to see progression throughout the year. If you had a tough stretch, what happened? What was the reasoning behind it? But I also do think, like, I'm not going to overreact to a hot stretch in the tournament, because guys do get on a heater and, you know, Rob Dillingham all of a sudden starts really cooking. Yes, that's a different story because we've seen it happen throughout the year. So that could be something to keep an eye on. But for me, if I've done my checkups and a guy's starting to find his groove going into the tournament and then parlays that into a nice tournament run, then that tells me something, like the confidence is starting to surge. But, you know, I'm not going to all of a sudden move a guy up 20 spots on my board just because he had a good three games in the tournament. What about you, Metcalf? Where are you at? Where does it go for you? Can it swing your opinion the other way if a guy has a tough tournament, if he's had a solid year?
Really rarely. You know, I think someone who kind of fit that bill for a lot of people was Franz Wagner. Kind of struggled when, you know, that final game of the tournament, after they had a couple injuries on that team, and he was really thrust into kind of being the only primary creator and consistent scoring option, and it had a rough game with it. That left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths, but, you know, I put way more weight on the regular season. I think this time of year is really fun to just kind of watch and be a fan. Obviously, it's a piece of the puzzle. You want to see how some of these guys react and adjust to new matchups and, you know, typically higher level competition, whether it's other NBA prospects or that they haven't seen all year, or teams just littered with upperclassmen who played completely different brands of basketball. So it's a piece to the puzzle, but for me, it's kind of a small piece, and I tend to put way more weight onto the regular season and, you know, that big, much bigger sample size. Obviously, if a guy goes on a heater, like, you know, like back in the day we saw from Kemba Walker, it's kind of hard to discount it because he obviously stepped up, took, you know, showed the ability to take over games, put the team on his back, be that big time game changer. So it plays a factor, but in the end, I just really, really try and enjoy this time of the year because there's so much chaos with upsets and everything else. The different schemes, you know, some mid-major team gets absolutely scorching hot from behind the arc for a weekend, and they can completely ruin a title chase from a real contender. So it's just a fun time of the year, and I try and treat it as such.
The Franz one's a fantastic example because that hits home hard for me. I think that was one of my most valuable lessons. I'd been taught that, you know, kind of when I was trying to take this serious, gosh, years and years and years ago, when I was grinding in the industry, and a scout said, you know, never get too high, never get too low from a small stretch of games. And Franz was someone that left a bad taste in my mouth in the tournament. And I think that kind of, you know, watered down my evaluation of him. I still had him in the top 20s, but I kind of was like, yeah, maybe this is a guy that's going to be a nice third piece when, you know, now he looks like a stud. But, you know, someone in the chat on YouTube, shout out to everyone watching with us, but even brought up Brandon Miller last year. It's popular. It's common to have this. It's not like an unforeseen thing. Like we can see these guys have a rough stretch and we can't overreact if they struggle, because the whole year we see guys, you know, Jacoby Walters, a guy that had a stretch of games, and all of a sudden now, you know, maybe we bring him up in this episode, but what if Jacoby has two knockout games and he's dropping 30? Like, does that change our opinion in a hurry? Does that say like, hey, this is why we were buying in, this is what we were believing in? It's really fascinating. I just don't think it's something where I'm panicking either way. I'm taking these games in with the full slate, and then we go back and reevaluate and see, you know, where the progression has been. And maybe if it's trended the other way, these games are important for kind of swaying your opinion of like, wait, nope, this is the player I was buying into. And I think it's going to be really big couple of weeks for some guys.
Absolutely. All right. Let's just dive into some of these guys. And do you want to go first? You want me to go first? How do you want to go with this?
I want you to set the tone. Let's let you set the tone.
All right. The first guy that immediately comes to mind is Stephen Castle from UConn. He is a guy that had a fascinating freshman season, very highly touted coming into the year, was a lot of people's number one preseason guy, kind of fell off because the shot just wasn't there. And it really hasn't been there all season. It still isn't there. It's starting to it feels like it's trending in the right direction a little bit, where he's at least shooting it. When he's completely left wide open, he's taking it confidently. That complete hesitation and passing up wide open looks every single possession is gone, but he's starting to do literally everything else on the court at a really, really high level. We're recording this a couple hours after they beat Xavier, and just another really well-rounded game from him, where 10 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 blocks, 2 for 3 from the line, 4 of 10 from the field, and 0 for 2 from 3. But I like that 3-point attempt is 2 or more attempts. Obviously it'd be nice if they went in, but the fact that he's just taking them, that was my biggest gripe with him for most of the season. The fact that he's starting to take them is a really, really big sign for me, in terms of just confidence and willingness to shoot, because it changes everything. At the end of the day, he'll probably have to shoot it to really make it to the, you know, to reach his peak, obviously, in the NBA, but he's just done everything else on the court at a really extremely high level this year.
I mean, we're talking about a guy that we were projecting in the beginning of the year to be a dynamic, multi-level offensive threat, and he's transitioned now to a stud defender at 6'6", with the ability to fill up the box scores. He's been flirting with triple-doubles this year. You know, it's going to be the million-dollar question. It's why we talk to scouts and executives, and they're all saying the second part of the draft process this year is going to be bigger than ever, because teams are going to see Stephon Castle in person. They're going to be like, can he shoot it? Yeah. You know, when Stephon Castle gets done with the UConn's tournament run, he's going to start shooting. He's going to work on his outside shot immediately, because he knows that's the swing for him. If he can prove enough in front of NBA personnel to make them feel comfortable with the progression of his shot, he's going to be a name that climbs throughout the pre-draft process. Because, like we said, 6'6 with feel, and the defense has become a serious, serious weapon this year.
And just coming into this year, I thought he was a bad defender in high school.
So which shows the mentality. Yes. And that shows the mentality of what he's bought into. There was preseason buzz from UConn practices about just what he was doing defensively. And you were like, whoa, wait, what? That's a big development. So I know our own Corey Tolliball is at the Big East tournament and praised. He was very, very, like, I texted him today. I was like, thoughts so far? And you know, this is, I texted him when Castle, I think, was like 0 for 5 from the field to start the game. And he's like, man, early Chicago Bulls, Jimmy Butler vibes. And that's a heck of an endorsement. So I think there's just a lot of upside with his game. I understand if the range is going to be wide moving forward, because I think if you're either buying the shot, you're in a big way. If you're not buying it, he could go later. So there's a lot of guys on that UConn team. You know, I'll go next and I'll stay
Let's stick on Castle just for a couple minutes.
Okay. Sorry. What I was saying is UConn, we know if you follow the draft closely, a deep tournament run can get your buzz cooking.
Yeah.
And I know what we all just said about don't get too high, don't get too low, but the media pumps up if you're impressing and you have a lengthy tournament run, because now all the eyes are on you. So it could get cooking in a hurry for Castle if he keeps impressing.
Yeah, and UConn's projected to be a one seed, so they're looking to repeat. And I really think if Castle plays a major factor in that and shoots 35% from three, I think that's going to be way more than enough for people to kind of start considering him as a legit top five guy, maybe even higher. He's been at 2 for me for a couple weeks now. I get the hesitations. I had all of them earlier in the year. But just his willingness to play a new role, because in high school, he was the point guard. Everything stemmed off of what he did, his gravity, his playmaking, his decision-making. We've seen flashes of that from him this year with the second unit, or as like a second side creator, but the bulk of his play has been as an off-ball guy with cutting, offensive rebounding, running in transition, running that second side pick and roll, and he's thrived in it. He's done a whole bunch of stuff and played a completely different role than we ever saw from him before he got to UConn. And that malleability, that willingness to adjust your game, change your tendencies, change your habits, and be a different player on a team that's the reigning national champion with expectations to do so again, and now be a major part of that rotation, that's really encouraging to me. So yes, the shot isn't there yet. He ranks in the 34th percentile in spot up shooting. Don't love that. He also ranks in the 90th percentile in transition, 84th percentile in pick and roll, 80th in offensive rebounds, 75th in handoffs, and the 85th in pick and roll when you add in his passes. I just think there's so much to like. I think there's so much IQ. There's so much feel for the game there, where if you're a really crappy team at the very top of the draft and he just has a strong tournament, not an outlandish tournament, but a strong tournament that convinces you that he's the real deal, I'm not sure there are many more intriguing guys to take a swing on when you're looking at the top 3 to 5 picks.
I mean, it's tough because we can say this every year for a lot of guys, but I think Stephon Castle, this is how high I think of him. I think if the shot gets unlocked, I think he could be the best player in this class. Like, I really do. Like, I watched his high school game against Ron Holland and Duncanville. They were the number one team of the country. He dropped 41. He had a towel hanging from his nose. He took over that game. And if you get that guy to start believing in the outside shot with now the development defensively at 6'6", like, this isn't a 6'3 guard. We're talking 6'6 combo guard with feel, two-way upside. I do really think, like, if that shot gets unlocked, we could be doing a redraft in 3 years and being like, Castle's a top three, if not number one player. But
the flip side
is the big word. Flip side's there too. If the shot doesn't get unlocked, maybe this is a good question. If the shot doesn't get unlocked, but it gets to low 30% from three, could he still find a way to play in the league for a very long time? I do believe now, because of the defensive strides and the playmaking, I believe he could find a way. Like, we've seen other guys really figure out how to latch on forever. So I just think maybe the floor is higher with Castle than we think. And the ceiling is really damn high. So
yeah,
we talked about it before we even hit record. I was like, man, I can't move him. I love him up there. I've got him in my top six, I think. I'm going to swing on that one, and I'm going to be patient.
I agree. But UConn is a title favorite for a reason, and it's not just because of Stephon Castle. So who is the next player, or the first player on your list?
I'm going to stay with UConn so we can just hammer this out. I'm going to say Donovan Klingon. I really do think the big man's starting to heat up. We don't have to go crazy in depth with this one. But I will say, Corey, again, one of the first things he said to me is Castle is humongous as expected, but he is extremely long.
You mean Klingon?
I was like, Klingon. He said Klingon is humongous as I expected, but he's also freakishly long, which I was like, okay. So I think Klingon, we've been talking about this the last couple episodes as he was starting to really progress. If he can stay healthy and they have a lengthy run and he keeps producing, keeps being an impact on the defensive side of the ball, the playmaking, I think, is really starting to intrigue too. If the minutes are high and he's really being a force, I think this is the time where Klingon could start really cementing himself as a top 10 guy, especially with a lot of the questions around these guys. I think teams are going to be intrigued if he can play serious minutes and be a force. And it looks like it's trending that way. Like, he had another solid game today, filled up the box score. But I want to see, as these games get tougher, can Klingon stay on the court? Can he stay out of foul trouble? Can he keep doing what he's doing? Because, you know, it's not going to be everyone's cup of tea at 7'2", 280. But I also think people got to remember what he was doing last year when it was running the break and throwing down alley-oops. And he can move. But, again, medicals are going to be humongous. That second half of the draft process is going to be humongous, especially for Klingon.
Yeah, and the foot injuries scare the crap out of me. Someone that big, especially multiple in the same year, horrifying. Absolutely horrifying. But God, he's good. And the foot injuries are, you know, a month ago or so, I was kind of out on him because it's like, God, I don't trust you to stay healthy. So why am I going to take you in the top 20? Just slander.
Apollo, fired. Yeah, said Castle's this season's Johnny Davis for Metcalf. That's personal. That's personal.
How dare you?
Apollo, how dare you?
God,
now you're could have passed that
just
one.
Derailing the whole show.
Oh, gosh.
No, but he's back in my lottery because he's just been that good on both ends of the floor. He's that dominant. Physically, there's one person in the country who can deal with him, and he's probably going to win his second straight player of the year from Purdue. It's just, and, you know, the thing with Klingon is, yeah, he's big, and a lot of his numbers and production right now just come from him being such a physical presence compared to everyone else he's going against. But I think there's a lot more agility and kind of nimbleness to him and skill that hasn't really been he hasn't really been afforded to unlock and display on the court. I'm a really big believer in his passing upside. I think he's got a ton more to his game in that realm, whether it's kind of making kickouts from the elbow. He's starting to show some stuff out of the short roll. I think his footwork is really good, but is he going to be healthy? And can he stay out of foul trouble? He leans on guys way too much for how big he is. He defends guys like he's 6'9", not 7'1", or whatever he's listed at. He's the second biggest dude in the country. Just stay vertical, dude. You're super strong. Really good shot blocking instincts. Incredible rebounder on both ends. Absolute force. Stop fouling dudes. You don't need to. But yeah, with him, it's just going to be, can you stay healthy? And if he has any sort of injury in this tournament run, it's going to be incredibly devastating.
Any sort of injury, and you're going to hear every scout just go, oh, and that stock will, be like plummeting down, you know, throwing it over a cliff. It just got to stay healthy, got to play minutes. Got to get through medicals. Someone asked in the chat earlier that is the combine rules this year. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Metcalf, I think everyone has to do everything. Is that the
thing if you're at? Year? I think if you're at the combine, you have to do.
You have to measure and give medicals.
You have
medicals.
To do all the measurement. Yes. Measurements.
Yes. And, so you can't hide it.
Yeah. Unless you just don't go to the combine.
I think you might have to, everyone has to measure and do.
If you declare and you're 100% in the draft, I think you have to provide everything.
Yes. And I think like last year we had the big names that like didn't measure. And I think this year it's like, no, you got to measure.
Yeah.
And I think guys would try to like agents to try to hide the medicals and like only share. I think this year it's like, no, that's not happening anymore. If we're wrong, everyone can let us know. But I'm pretty sure that's the big deal because we were like, ooh, good move, NBA. But I'm right there with you.
Yeah. Just before we move on, Honey Badger with a question in the chat here. How has Walker Kessler's league impact influenced your Klingon point of view?
You know, I think it's focusing on an NBA skill set. Like, what can you bring to an NBA team? And I think with Klingon, it's like, yeah, the NBA is getting away from, you know, the overly physically imposing bigs. And, you know, we're not in the old school era of like, oh, you just stick a huge big down there and play inside out. But now it's, well, what if this guy can do a lot of stuff on the court? And like Klingon, me and you talked about this before the year even started. We were intrigued with the playmaking and we were starting to see some of that. And I think people, the 7'2", 280, yes, with the feet scare me, but he can move and he's got some switchability. And with all bigs, I'm right there with Metcalf. Like, stay out of foul trouble. You don't have to try to block everything, but like, he's got mobility. If a team's convinced that he can stay healthy, I hate to keep saying medicals, but if those check out, I think there's a lot of stuff with Klingon that you could really get excited about. You know, we didn't see the outside shot trend this year. Fan called us out on that, but I do believe that's something that team, like, he's going to showcase that in workouts and teams are going to be intrigued with some of the raw tools. So, Kessler was a name I was lower on, but I think that's also helped me look and be like, well, what's their one skill they could offer? Kessler's was very dangerous shot blocker and rebounder. Now I think Klingon could be that same boat where it's like, are we going to overthink this one or could this just work if we have the right tools around him? What about you?
I mean, Kessler's tough because he had the best block rate in like college basketball history, or at least like going back to 2008. Mm-hmm. So pretty good. I also think he's a little more, I think he's a little different of a player stylistically. But I mean, it's definitely in kind of an interesting case study. I was too low on Kessler, but I think that kind of mindset of he's not necessarily going to be a franchise center where you build a team around them, but he can be an absolute defensive anchor and really provide just some solid play finishing on offense. So it's fascinating. I think it's a good player to kind of look at and measure, you know, other guys just because of kind of how they play, you know, like Jonas Valanciunas, but I think Klingon is a significantly better defender. And the only kind of comp there is they're big and super physical. And Valanciunas is now stretching the floor a little bit more. So maybe Kessler is kind of the proper comp there. But I do think Klingon has a little more nimbleness to his footwork on offense. I think he has a little more passing upside. I think he has a little more ball skills than Kessler. But defensively, that's probably what you're going to see a lot of from Klingon. And if you're getting that guy in like a 20 to 25 minute backup role, I think that's where I get really excited about Klingon.
Yeah. I think that's where, like, one of my favorite fits continues, and I know some people are going to like start groaning, but like, I continue to say, like, I love Kling and go to OKC. And I think people are like, well, that's because you're going to start Klingon at the five. And I'm like, no. I'm not touching the starting lineup. I'm bringing Klingon off the bench to do a little bit of what Chet can offer, but he's now doing it as against backup minutes. And then now you have depth where, like, if you need to, in a playoff series, if you need size, you could play them together because they both have great feel. They're humongous. And then you have some versatility, but I would add Klingon as big depth to match up with opponents. I'm not drafting anyone to get Chet away from the five. I know that people want to keep Chet at the five. So like, that's why it's one of my favorite fits with OKC. And I know Thunder fans are like, can we project somebody else? I'm like, why? It's a great fit. But it's, you know, we never know what they're going to do. So I him in a number of places.
Yeah, no, for sure. And with just OKC specifically, we need to stop thinking that whoever they take in the first round is going to start for them. They're challenging for the one seed in this class. They're a legit title contender. A rookie's not going to be starting for a title contender next year. So
no,
they're going to be this sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth man. And that's okay. Because they got depth already. And if you're not playing, they got guys who will. So
this is the year to get depth.
Yes.
If you're trying to find starters, you probably are in for a rude awakening unless you're picking at the top and you're in dire need of an addition to the starting lineup. But I think this is the year, if you get past a certain range, you're drafting for depth. You're not drafting for starters.
Absolutely. Okay. Let's move on to my next guy.
As rookies. I should have said that. Go ahead. Sorry.
You mentioned him in the intro, Jacoby Walter.
On my list too. So
okay.
We'll combine that one. I'll add it for both.
Look at that. Look at that synergy. It's been rough recently for Walter. I don't think he's broken 50% shooting in the last 4 or 5 games. Not ideal. We haven't seen the shooting and scoring efficiency that we saw earlier in the year, but I still can't completely quit him. He's obviously fallen down my board a little bit, but I think if he has a big tournament run, then I think Baylor go really deep and he's going to be a driving reason why. So I think he's kind of locked in most places as like a late lottery mid first round pick, but the shot kind of comes back. He starts to, you know, the defense continues to trend in the right direction. The passing results in a couple more assists a game. I think there's real steam for him to kind of generate and momentum for him to generate here if he gets hot and has a really strong tournament run and starts to look like the guy that we saw at the start of the season.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think this is a player that you could argue has the most to gain from the tournament. You know, and I looked at his last 9 games. Metcalf, you're spot on. He had one game he shot over 50%. That was against Houston. He had 23-4 on 7 of 13.
He was very good that game.
But he was 5 for 10 from the free throw line, which drives me insane for someone like Jacoby. I'm sorry. 5 for 10 from three. I hate when I can't see the top of the column. His last 9 games, 15.9 points, 4.4 rebounds, 1.2 assists, shooting splits of 36, 32, 77. It would not shock me if he just has a couple heaters and we're like, finally, here we go. It seems like we're so close to him kind of turning a corner and like being like, all right, here we go. There's Jacoby, the top 10 prospect we've all been enamored with. But it's tough. It's really tough because you start seeing a lot of these other guys like Buzelis off the top of my head trending in the right direction. Klingon, we were just talking about, like guys like that are kind of making a little bit momentum to get ahead of him, which you start comparing. But Jacoby could do a lot for his draft stock with a couple of good games, because I still believe if we make a power rankings on who could go in front of NBA personnel and really start to make them comfortable again, I think Jacoby would be one of my top 3 guys, because he's going to go shoot the crap out of it. And he's going to be 6'5 with a good frame. And I don't know. I'm not out yet. I'm still believing. That first game, I'm going to be fascinated to watch, because he should put up some numbers right out of the gate. But I just want to see him be efficient. I haven't talked to you much about him. Where are you at with his defense?
Okay. I think it's improving.
It hasn't been what we wanted it to be.
No.
This year.
No.
I thought he was going to be like Castle, where we were like, whoa. But it seems like we're like, no, come on.
Yeah, so,
like, we believe this part. Like, come on. But you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, no. When I wrote about him at the start of the year as, you know, why not Jacoby Walter for number one? This is back in October, folks. Settle down. I've moved off that. But one of the things I highlighted with this defense was he gets blown past a lot, and he relies a lot on his really good hands and those kind of reach around poke away steals and his defensive playmaking. The team defense, the off ball stuff always looked better than the on ball stuff. And that immediately translated, where first half of the season, he was getting blown past constantly. He was one of the worst defenders in college basketball. The first couple months, I still wouldn't classify him as good. I think the off-ball stuff, the attentiveness, the communication, the rotations, the switching, all that has been a lot better. The on-ball stuff is still pretty hit or miss, where he'll just get completely dusted on pretty simple straight line drives a couple times a game, but he's starting to move his feet a little better, reacting a little quicker. So by no means is he a good defender right now, but I think there have been steady steps in the right direction, if I'm being optimistic about it. Pessimistic view is that it couldn't have gotten much worse than what it was looking like.
Right there with you. Right there with you. What else? You're up next. Or no,
I just said Jacoby.
We both said him, so should I just... my turn? I'm going to say... I'm going to stay with it because he's a hot name right as we're recording this. So let's have some fun, Metcalf. Colin Murray-Boyles.
Oh, you took one from me.
Is on my list. So if we have the same list, I love it. Right now, in the SEC tournament, they're beating Arkansas by 19 with 3 minutes left, and he has 24, 7, 2, 4 steals on 11 of 15, shooting 2 for 3 from the free throw line. We mocked him at no ceilings to Chicago at 12. People were like, what the hell? And I was like, welcome to draft season.
A couple of us wanted him earlier.
Yeah, a couple wanted earlier. I think he would be the ultimate. You're swinging on just impact, high impact, really young, 6'8", 230, versatile piece. You're swinging on, we'll figure out the shot. I think this is a legit name that really could start to cook. And I think he's doing it right now. And this is where, like, these tournaments carrying it into, if they survive one or two games and he performs, I think that's going to heat up in a hurry. So what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts about the shot too? Like, cause I know you wrote about him at NoCeilingsNBA.com. There we go.
Shameless plug number two. Let's go.
Plug number two. It's free. So what are your thoughts about everything? Cause you just wrote about
it. I'm a little more skeptical on the shot than others seem to be.
Are you skeptical on the 3-point shot, or like, could he develop a little Julius Randle mid-range?
So
I told you guys, I was like, I watched him and I was like, this seems like a very raw version of Kentucky Julius Randle. And I told everyone, yes, I understand what a beast Julius Randle was at Kentucky, but I'm saying this one seems like one that's further away in his development, which is scary how good of a defensive asset he is right now.
Yes, and I see less Julius Randle and more Bam Adebayo. I threw out that question in the chat the other day and got absolute silence back, so always appreciate that from the No Ceilings crew. Just fantastic stuff. Just asking a question, am I insane for seeing a little bit of Bam in Colin Murray-Boyles? And I don't really buy the 3-point shot developing like Julius Randle's has, because Julius Randle's turned into a legit knockdown 3-point shooter. Maybe I'm a little scarred from him just dropping 40 against the Timberwolves every time they play, and he's an all NBA guy. I don't see Murray-Boyles necessarily getting to that level with his jumper. But it wouldn't surprise me if he starts becoming kind of a reliable 15 to 18 foot face up mid-range knockdown guy, consistently hit turnaround stuff in the paint, improve that kind of way like we've seen from Bam Adebayo. But a lot of the indicators weren't super promising going back to high school. So I know he was a little more willing to shoot in high school. He hasn't really been allowed to or asked to shoot or even look to shoot in college. So obviously the willingness, the lack of volume, the lack of sample there is concerning. And I'm skeptical, especially since the free throw percentage is pretty meh. Anyways, kind of like Castle though, he just fucking rocks at everything else. in terms of defense, he's an absolute monster freak on the boards on both ends of the floor, and absolutely fantastic passer, especially for his position. So I think he could play some small ball center, but most ideal role is probably as a four next to a stretch big. You know, we talked about OKC earlier. I love that fit for him. Provide some rebounding help, boost their defensive profile while also adding in that passing. You throw him next to a guy like Karl Anthony Towns. I think there are a lot of different routes that you could go with him, and he could really elevate the team or the rotation on both ends of the floor. So I'm a little more skeptical on the shot, but it's really tough for me not to buy into everything else he does. And, you know, we know that there are some analytics groups in the league who are falling head over heels for him.
Yeah. I mean, we had someone in the chat bring up kind of like, oh, Chicago, that's just them going Patrick Williams 2.0 experiment. And it's like, when you go look at Patrick Williams in college, like, he was not doing the box score filling like Murray Boyles is doing. Like, it's crazy. And I'm talking about like steals, blocks. Now, Patrick was shooting it from a little bit outside, and he had a phenomenal pre-draft process and just scorched up boards in a hurry. And this could be that, if you're thinking that, because there is teams like Metcalf brought up OKC where you're like, hey, we have all the offensive firepower we need. We just drafted Cason Wallace, who is going to be a fantastic defensive asset moving forward, and the offensive upside's being unlocked. What if we got a versatile defender off the bench? Like, what if you played him and Chet together against the against bench rotate? Like, it's just find the NBA skill. Don't focus on what they can't do. What can this team, what can this prospect bring to a team? And Murray Boyles is crazy upside with the ability to be a winning player, and I think that's why teams are going to be really intrigued with his game.
Yeah, and I think with a guy like him, I know for the vast majority of prospects, it's always, well, what's the shot going to be? Can he shoot it? Does he have to shoot it? And I think with Murray Boyles, I know that's probably the right answer, but it kind of feels lazy and ignores everything else that he does. I know a big part of evaluation and scouting and all that kind of stuff is, what can't he do? What are the major holes in his game? What are the red flags? What's going to keep him off the court? And maybe at the end of the day, the shot is going to be that for him. But we also have to look at, what can he do? What does he do game in and game out? And kind of similar to Castle, he does everything else at an extremely high level. I highly recommend going back and watching that Tennessee game the other week, because his defense and his rebounding was absurd, especially for a freshman. So I think he's one of these guys where it's like, yeah, it'd be great if he shoots it. At the end of the day, he'll probably have to, but it wouldn't shock me if he's one of the few who are really able to overcome that, just because of the versatility and the impact that he consistently has night in and night out on both ends of the floor.
I'm right there with you. Am I up?
I think so.
I'm going to say Cody Williams.
Yeah, I thought about him.
Tough one, because they're projected to be one of the last teams in. I think Bracketology would have them as a play-in game for the 11th seed with Virginia, which would be erotic. Just unbelievable. If we had Cody going against Ryan Dunn. I had Cody at one point. I've moved him down. It really was a tough time for me. I had to, you know, look myself in the mirror and say, okay, you know, stop thinking with your heart, think with your head. I've moved him down. But I do think if he's been banged up, he hasn't played in a little bit, if Cody can come back and have some good performances, maybe Colorado wins a game or two, I think that'll heat him up a little bit. My problem with Cody and why I'm still high on him so much is I'm not projecting him as his rookie year. I think he is going to need a lot of patience with whoever drafts him. But by the time Cody's getting ready for his second contract, what type of player could this look like? And that's a scary individual for me. But I think needs some time, needs a lot of patience. I would love for him to somehow go to a team like Washington, Utah, just that's just patient. That's just like, give us talent and let us, we're not going to contend anytime soon. Let us just keep grooming people. And, you know, we've seen what Washington's done with Coulibaly this year. Maybe that's a great place where he could just get reps, but I'm still high on the upside. I think it's just, we're going to require some serious patience. People are going to overreact if they draft him and he's not cooking right away, because they're going to be like, oh, but it's like, no, Cody just needs time.
He's going to be a really bad rookie.
He's going to be. I think there's a lot of guys that are going to be really bad rookies. Yes. I think there's a lot of guys that are going to turn into really good players in the NBA Agreed. Level, but I think this class is going to have a lot of bad rookies, which is tough for people to hear. But I'm just saying, it's about fit with a lot of these guys. Like if Sar goes to the Spurs, throwing a hypothetical out, everyone's going to be wanting him to just cook like Victor was this year. It's like, no. They might be bringing him behind Victor to let him groom and get some confidence. So I think this is going to be a tester for a lot of people to be patient. But Cody, I still am buying the upside. I just think we're seeing flashes of the tools and it's a long road ahead.
Yeah. And unfortunately right now, that's kind of all it is with him is flashes. I just did huge catch up and deep dive into basically all of Colorado's games, as I wrote for Tristan Da Silva on Friday over at NoCeilingsNBA.com. Shameless plug number 3, we're on a roll. And Cody kind of fell into that bucket of you forgot he was on the floor a lot. And that is really scary for me, especially if we're talking about a guy as the top 3 to 5 pick. Some of the tools, some of the flashes are fascinating. And I still have him at like 5 or 6, so I'm not out by any means. But I think the top 2, top 3 buzz that he was getting a month or so ago is
out
the window. I think it's done.
Yeah, it's done. I don't even think he could do anything to get back. Like if he put 30, but he's not going to do that because they have KJ Simpson and Da Silva.
He's 100% playing, correct? He's cleared to play because he hasn't played since February 24th. And he's missed games on and off all season. He's kind of fought that injury bug. I think he broke his nose or got popped in the face a couple weeks ago. So I know he was playing with a mask. He's battled stuff. You know, I'm not going to ding a guy necessarily for getting hurt, but when it affects your rhythm and takes you out of your play and, you know, you start to see some of these inconsistencies where it's a lot of single digit scoring. It's a lot of very low shot attempts. The turnovers are, you know, 7, 4, 5, 5, 5. It's concerning. So there was these last month of play for him has been a struggle where when he came back from that first injury spell early January, kind of turn of the year, he looked fantastic. He looked really, really good. And February came along. I think a little more tape on him got out there. He started showing up on more scouting reports. And it showed, and the inconsistencies started to appear a little more. The fouls started climbing, the turnovers started climbing, the looking for his own shot, creating his own shot, consistently finishing around the rim went down a lot. So I think he has a lot of questions to answer still. I think he's long-term. I'm really intrigued with him. I just worry about if he goes to the wrong landing spot, what is that patience going to be like? Because we continue to see it year over year over year. There's very little patience in the NBA world. Guys can front office people, coaches have multi-year contracts, but they're not really multi-year contracts. They can get fired and due at any point. So if he's not ready to contribute and ready to play, he's not going to get those minutes to develop. And I think he's really one of these guys where for him to really reach that peak and really be who we think he can be in the long run, he's got to work through that stuff on the court. And I'm just a little scared that he's not going to get the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, they play Utah tonight. As of yesterday, he was questionable. But I mean, you got to get far in this tournament if you're going to have a chance to get in. So like they got to win that game, and then they're going to play the winner of Stanford and Washington State. If they get through that, then potentially setting up a big dance against Arizona or Oregon versus UCLA. So like, yeah, he needs to play. He needs to be playing. Yeah. But I think what Metcalf just said is one of the most important things that I think a lot of us overlook. when it comes to mock drafts or projections, or when we have the actual draft, and it's like, why did they keep passing up on this guy? It's because guys have contracts. Yeah. They have, their job is on the line. It's very easy to be like, well, let's take this guy because he has all the upside in the world. And it's like, you might not be around for him to reach his potential. Like, you might be out of a job if you draft Cody Williams at 5 and he's not ready for 3 years. So it's a fine line everyone dances of like, who could help me get a new contract? And now, obviously, some GMs have built enough safety. You know, the Prestes, the Danny Ainges have built enough of like, I can take a swing. But you got to have ownership that's patient. You got to have ownership that's understanding that if you swing on this guy and he's not ready, it's okay. But Cody's going to be a fascinating one to keep evaluating. And, you know, we keep talking to people. The opinions of everyone
it's everywhere.
All over the place. Especially like Cody.
And I can't fault any of them.
No, I can't.
Which is the fun thing about this draft is if you give me a cogent argument for literally
anyone,
15 anyone. Different guys in, at one, I'm like, all right. Okay, cool.
This year more than ever, I can talk to 5 people and get 5 different things. And it's unbelievable. You usually get like, okay, at least 50% are on the same side of the fence. This year, it's like, I either love this guy, I'm way out of him, and everywhere in between. It's really fun. So going to be crazy moving forward. But yeah, you're up, sir.
Okay. My next one, Duke Blue Devil.
Ooh.
Current combo / shooting guard. I think he has more point guard upside. Jared McCain.
See, this is where we're getting interesting because I was making my list and I was like, well, what guys have really heated up that could take it up to another level? And McCain was one I was thinking of, but I was like, how much more could, and then I like where you're going with this one. So hit me with it.
This dude just fucking rocks.
I love how much you've bought into. I proud member of the Jared McCain fan club.
I would take
love applications this time of the year. I would take him lottery.
So the pushback with McCain I keep seeing is 6'2" shooting guard. I don't think he's a shooting guard. He's being forced to play exclusively shooting guard because he's the best shooter on this team, and they have 3 other point guard / initiators in Proctor, Roach, and Foster. So who's going to move to shooting guard? The best shooter on the team, obviously. In Portland, he was arguably the best passer and playmaker that we saw at Hoop Summit Drink. His ability to run the pick and roll and initiate the offense, find those weak side shooters, was on full display constantly in high school. I think there's so much more playmaking and initiation and just passing upside with him that he's just not been allowed to show because he hasn't been put in that position. In terms of shooting, people like shooting. Good shooters tend to make the league. He's nasty. 90th percentile overall on jumpers, 86th percentile off the catch, 86th percentile off the dribble. Additionally, you know, you're like, 6'2", well, he's probably just a three-point shooter, can't really score at the rim. Wrong. 71st percentile on points per possession at the rim, shooting 62.1%. He can play off 1 foot. He can play off 2 feet. He's got really good craft, really good playmaker on the interior too. So if he gets hot, starts showing just flashes of that passing ability as well, I think he could really, really jump up into lottery discussions. So absolutely love Jared McCain. Ramble on a little bit because something is beeping in my house and I don't know what it is.
Gotta love that. Gotta love that. That's why we go live, folks. I'm a big fan of McCain for everyone listening. His last 8 games, 16.3 points, 5.8 rebounds, 1.8 assists, 1.3 steals, shooting splits of 47, 46, 95. To go off of what Metcalf was saying while he tries to figure out what the heck's going on with this house, I really do think, like, if you go back and watch his stuff, he is an intelligent player that makes the right reads, understands how to make, you know, the extra pass or be a hockey assist guy. I think we're looking at a lot of these smaller guards, and it is the year in this class of having smaller guards that you got to figure out what's going on when it comes to our team's going to buy in on, like, we don't care if they're smaller in a weird way because they're a high level basketball player with good feel that can make an impact to winning. And McCain's, you know, Tyreek Spoctor goes down with an injury this year. He steps in. He might be listed at 6'3", maybe 6'4" with the hair, but he can rebound. He understands how to make an impact. He's accepted different roles. He's taken on the challenge this year. He's shooting the crap out of it too. And you know, that Miami game, it was terrifying how quickly he could take over that game. So he dropped 35, I believe, in that game. It's going to get really interesting with McCain, especially if Duke can have a little bit of a run. I could see him being a name that continues to climb, like Metcalf saying, just a nasty, nasty player. So we're wondering if Metcalf's going to, you know, exist a little bit. Let's get a comment real quick. Jordan Johnson, who's a better small ball big man for the Warriors, Murray Boyles or Jaden Lee? Ladie, maybe someone else in this class. Warriors, oh man, yeah, it's gonna be tough for them because pop my head. We had a question, Metcalf, about a better small ball big for the Warriors, Murray Boyles or Jaden Ladie. Warriors don't have a first, which is gonna be challenging to get CMB. I absolutely love him there. Yeah, I don't know. They're going to have to get interesting, try to buy a pick. There's a good depth for a second round to have a pick. What happened? What, I mean, did you it's blowing up?
Fire detector needed new battery. So obviously right now is the time. It's either right now or 2 a.m. So, you know, you take what you can get. So apologies about that.
Jonathan Mobo maybe is a small ball big for the Warriors if they can potentially get him. He's really,
and they
really
also have Trace Jackson Davis.
Yeah, so yeah, TJD is going to be very good for them for years. I just went on to rant about McCain of how much I love him, the shot, what he's been doing lately. I think teams are going to buy into it. They don't
care.
Where
you are with this defense?
There's nothing with his game where I'm like concerned.
Yeah,
overly concerned, I would say. I think the thing that people are going to keep pointing out, which I brought up, is like, hey, he's only 6'3", but this is the year in which I think teams are going to say, are we worried about the height or are we worried about him being a damn good basketball player? And he rebounds. He's tough.
Very good rebounder.
Very good rebounder. He's tough. He's welcomed the challenge of playing multiple roles, different challenges, like what they've asked him to do. That Miami game is a holy crap game when you're coming to like, oh, when Jared McCain's cooking, look what he does. Yeah. And I'm just a big believer. I think if they make a little run, yeah, I don't think lottery's crazy. And when I say lottery, I can see it being end of the lottery. Yeah. But I think he's going to have plenty of fans. He's probably going to, I would guess, be someone that has some good intel too.
I need to do some
digging on McCain. I think
I do.
That's one name that I haven't really heard.
He's another name where he's just fallen all over the place.
It's funny, you don't... It speaks volumes to me when you get a bunch of intel and you don't get bad intel.
Yeah.
And I've never gotten anything about McCain in a bad way. Nope. So like, that's one name I might need to start poking people specifically. Like, talk to me about McCain. You brought up 15 people. I want to know about McCain. So it's just funny how people want to bring up the same names, but interesting. That also could mean people are trying to be quiet about it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to your next guy.
Okay. I can't ignore it anymore. So what I've got four, we got one each remaining.
Yeah. I just have one left on my list.
Okay. Our knight in shining armor, Justin Edwards.
Oh, he was my name.
Yes. Let's go. Okay.
God, we're back. In. Look at us.
I have to preface this by saying I very much understand this is a small sample size.
Oh, so small.
Very, very small. But Justin Edwards has started to look a lot better lately. Yes, it helps that he went 20. He had 28 points on 10 of 10 shooting. I understand that. I'm very well aware of that. He's looked much better, though, on the court. He looks confident. He looks assertive. His last five games in 23 minutes, he's averaging 13 points, four rebounds, 1.4 steals, shooting splits of 69, 64, 81. His true shooting percentage over that stretch is 86.3. Yes, I understand he is a small sample. The 10 for 10 really helps, but
he's back.
Yeah, some are saying he might be back. I think this is the greatest wild card we've seen in recent draft history. We're like, this is where I'm saying I don't overreact. But if someone like Justin Edwards, all of a sudden that first tournament game, we look up and Justin dropped 20 with filling up the rest of the box score and was efficient, the light could be coming on. And then Kentucky has a deep run. And I think scouts will all of a sudden be like, wait a sec. What happened? What shifted? Is it the confidence came alive? Did he finally start to find his groove? Because 6'8", 205-ish, versatility to play multiple positions. If he's shooting the crap out of the ball, he just looks now like determined. He looks so focused of like, oh, this is what I can do on the offensive side of the ball. He also had a fadeaway against Tennessee that I was like, what in the world was that? Where has that been all year? I think it was like the left baseline, like a fadeaway turnaround. And I was like, oh my goodness, Justin. Like, okay. So I think that's my biggest wild card. That's the ace up your sleeve. If all of a sudden Justin Edwards starts to cook a little bit, this is going to get really fun fast. Complete curveball for this class. What do you think?
Yeah, and he was one of the guys that I wrote about midway through the year about maybe this is the class where we target some of the older guys who have been productive throughout the season and less of the wild card freshmen. And Justin Edwards was one of those wild card freshmen where just none of the numbers suggested that he was the first round pick. Off the top of my head, I forget what the numbers and benchmarks were at that point, but he would have been the first freshman since 2008, or going back to 2008, to be drafted in the first round with those numbers. A lot of the guys who also kind of met that criteria were guys who ended up returning for one, two, three more years and ended up having awesome careers like a Cam Johnson, Franz Wagner, Mikal Bridges. So there was this kind of framework of, okay, down the road, if things start clicking, Justin Edwards is the guy that we thought he could be coming into the season. We just hadn't seen any of it yet. Now that he's found his shot, finally, he's up to 38.5%, which is ridiculous considering he was sub 30 a month ago, 6 weeks ago. So yeah, it's a hot streak, but the shot was one of the few, you know, like main things that we were buying in his game coming into the season. It looked gorgeous in person. It was something that he was consistently working on. It's something that was pretty effective in high school, and it just was non-existent this year. So the fact that he's proving that he can be a consistent knockdown shooter, again, 38.5% for college is not overwhelming, but it's better. It's better than it was. It's trending in the right direction. It aesthetically, it looks good. The confidence is starting to come back. So I think he's really kind of playing. If he keeps up this pace, I think he's going to play himself back into the first round. He's the fact that, and he was off my board a couple weeks ago, and he's climbed back into the second. If he finishes strong, the defense has continued to look better too. The team defense has been really good all year. The rebounding's been solid. Keeps that up, continues to knock down shots throughout the tournament. This Kentucky team's going to put up 100 a game, like they have been recently. And he could be a big reason why. So I think he has a ton to gain. And if he can play his way back into the first round, that's an extra year on the contract. And that's a guaranteed 5-year contract.
I'm right there with, I mean, his splits throughout the year by month are hilarious. November, 7 games, 10.1 points, 4.1 rebounds, shooting splits of 50, 31, 66. December, 5 games, 9.4 points, 5.2 rebounds. Why do they put it this way? Shooting splits of 43, 15, 83. January, 4 points, 2.3 rebounds in 7 games. Shooting splits 36, 40, 66. Then here we go. February, 8 games, 10.9 points, 2.9 rebounds, shooting splits 58, 47, 83. And then March, his last three games, 12 points, 4 rebounds, 1.3 steals in 21 minutes on 60, 58, 83. So it's going back up. Like, we're trending in the right direction. And I understand it's like, hey, we need a little bit more. Yes, completely understand. I'm with Metcalf. I had him off my board. Like, completely off my board. Yeah. I know he's still ended up on our composite board, but I was like, he's next year guy. I don't see anything at all. And then all of a sudden these last games happen. I'm like, this is where I've been starting to see it. I have him back now in my middle of my second round. If he keeps trending this way, they have a deep run. That gets me reevaluating the whole year and be like, what switched? And I think he was battling some confidence issues this year. I can understand why. And now if he just looks determined lately, he kind of looks like he's playing like a prick, which is like, do you have a little bit of a dog in you? And it looks like he's all of a sudden playing with a little bit of like anger, which I'm like, yes,
he looks like a
jerk on the court.
He looks like the kid we saw at Hoop Summit.
Yes.
Drink. I'm sorry that we always go back to this.
No, but it's really important because we saw Ricochet at Hoop Summit and we were like, no, I was like, I'm out. I was like, end of the first, I'd throw a flyer if I had multiple picks. And then I watched him this whole year. And that's why people were like, why are you so high on Ricochet? He doesn't have that creation. I'm like, because I saw nothing. And I saw very, very, very raw, not close. And now I'm seeing a humongous leap in development. So that's so important to see the growth. Like, they're still kids. Like, goes back to people saying like 22-year-olds can't get better at basketball. It's ridiculous. So like, we're trying to see how much better have you gotten in less than a year, almost, or a year. And now Edwards is starting to kind of cook a little bit. And we're like, well, maybe this is, it didn't happen right away, but now it's starting to happen. So I'm just very intrigued. There's a lot of guys that are getting me on the edge of my seat in that first game, because I'm going to be like, this could seriously start to open up some eyes if you can have a strong game right now to start out.
Okay, let's just do a little exercise here. I'm just going to start at pick 15 in the first round and work my way down. Just let's assume his numbers stay exactly what they are right now, or he just finishes, you know, whatever he's been doing these last 10 games, you know, where it's not outlandish, but it wasn't what it was in the first half of the season.
But he's shooting 50% from three and averaging
let's say 40.
Okay.
10 points a game, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 stocks. That kind of ballpark. Tell me when you would be absolutely floored if he went 15 to Miami.
I'd be a little shocked there.
Like, we're on the draft stream and he gets his name called. You're not doing what though?
If he had a good, if the buzz, that's where the buzz in the pre-draft process, you start getting that, because someone will be like, hey, Edwards had a phenomenal workout. And I'd be like, that carries a lot of weight when you hear that from multiple people.
Okay. Well, this was a horrible exercise then, because the very first team I read off, you're like, yeah, I can see it.
No. It's just because it's Miami. So like, okay, so I'll say I will be
Toronto.
Shocked.
16 to Toronto.
I'd be shocked if they only had one pick.
Which I think they do.
I think they only have one pick right
because
now. Because
currently, yeah.
I would be shocked.
Theirs is going to San Antonio.
I'd be a little shocked.
17 to Philly.
Very shocked.
18 to Orlando.
We're starting to get to a point where I'm like, I'd be shocked a little bit. What about you?
It feels a little projecty, kind of like Jed and Caleb. Jed,
it seems too much of a swing.
19-20 to New York.
Because of the Kentucky ties, everyone's going to laugh. But I think if you have two, I would swing. If you're buying, if he goes to New York, works out for them, looks great, I would be throwing one of those at him. But you know, yeah. I mean, yeah. It's 6'8", 205 with shooting. And so, yeah.
21 Phoenix. I'd be a little bit.
I'd be shocked.
Atlanta, 22. I don't know what they're doing.
So. I don't know what they're doing, so I wouldn't be shocked.
23 to New Orleans. I think it's kind of right around that 19-20 spot in New York where if he can, where it's like, it's kind of starting to make some sense.
Yeah, like Milwaukee. I could probably get it.
I really like the idea of Ryan Dunn Milwaukee.
Yeah, I like Ryan Dunn with a lot of teams that don't need Ryan Dunn to do anything offensively. Like, I think if a team could be like, we have it under control offensively, just play really good defense, I think Ryan Dunn's going to be a very fun addition. But yeah, like Cleveland? Maybe?
Yeah, like long-term Caris LeVert replacement.
Wizards with their second pick.
Yeah.
See, now we're getting somewhere where everyone's going to be like, no, what did he do? But it's like, we have to remember 1 year doesn't tell the story. So if scouts were very high on Justin Edwards as a high school prospect, he just didn't have the strong year, they will still be very high on him. They will be very intrigued if everything checks out. Jaden McDaniels, Zaire Williams, like guys that just had a rough 1 year still end up first round picks. Peyton Watson. 1 year does not tell a story. So I that's why I'm not going to be shocked if Justin Edwards tests the waters and we're all here and he's staying in. I'm going to be like, okay, this is why, because people are going to be comfortable with their pre-evaluation, but it could also go the other way.
Absolutely. Anyone else? Do you any names you want to just kind of rapid fire?
I wrote down like 30, so I can't believe I listed five.
Give me five other names people should keep an eye out for having just a big kind of tournament run here.
Trey Alexander, I still believe they got a big one going on tonight, coming up soon against Providence. But Providence, I think in the like NCAA tournament, it could be big. Alex Caraban, Harrison Ingram, I think is a big one. Just a sleeper that I think could kind of start to cement himself as maybe like an early second round guy that playoff teams might try to target. Cause I've loved what I've seen from him being a freshman at Stanford to this year. I think it's a completely different player. Mark Sears, Jamal Shedd, Ryan Dunn. Ryan Dunn. Dunn goes and hits three threes in the first game,
I was going to say a single three.
Yeah. Ryan Dunn. Yeah, I mean,
he did it.
The dark horse is, I think it's going to be very interesting to see the brackets come out, because I think projected like Colorado State's supposed to play Houston or someone like that. So if Colorado State could have an upset and Nick Clifford plays really good, I think people are going to start getting familiar. It's just
matched up to currently. And ESPN's bracketology, they're a 9 seed against Northwestern. If they won that, they'd be playing Houston.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously Houston's going to be a tough first team to deal with in general, because they strike fear in everyone, but you never know. Like, we always get upset, so Colorado State would have to play the perfect game, but that's probably one of my bottom lists. What about you?
I think the Marquette guys, Oso and Kolek, yes, are two to keep an eye on. Tristan Newton from, you know, really Newton, Caraban, Cam Spencer. Can those guys play themselves into a second round / two-way situation? It wouldn't surprise me by any means. Let's see. I don't think Dalton Connect can do anything more.
No, I had Connect and I was like, I don't know what else he can do.
No.
It's like, but keep doing what he's doing.
And if he took a Rick Barnes team to the finals, whew.
That's where, if he gets to the final four and is cooking, people are going to have fun with that one.
Yeah.
Why is it Dalton Connect the top five pick? And I'd be like, that's a damn good question.
I know you guys hate him. Well, not hate. Hate strong. Hate's too aggressive. Antonio Reeves. This dude has been...
I don't hate any.
I know. That's why I retracted the hate.
Those are the guys,
I think it wouldn't surprise me if he goes first round.
I know. You've been saying that forever. Like, it's... The whole town knows Frank. But those are the guys that get hot in the tournament and literally all of a sudden it's like, why not Antonio Reeves at 28? You know, or someone like that. Yeah, I feel like I looked at the bracketology and I thought there was like a, I wrote PJ Hall down because I was like, I think there's a game in which PJ Hall could eat a little bit and shock some people.
Are they going to make it?
I don't know.
Because
they were projected to play someone.
And they lost their first ACC game.
Yeah, it's always fun when that happens because you're like, uh-oh, are you going to start training
early? They had him as a sixth seed, so.
Whoever they were projecting, I was like.
I don't know how that works.
I know, it's ridiculous. Whoever they were projected to play against in one round, I was like, uh-oh, that could be a PJ Hall game where he matches up well and then people overreact. But
is winner of St. John's Indiana State. The PJ Hall Robbie Avila game.
What's the next game?
Kentucky.
Yeah, I was like, what if PJ has a little bit of a heater against Kentucky's front line? Yeah, Big Z against PJ Hall is probably the matchup we all deserve. Anyone else for you?
No, that's all I got. This was a blast, as always, Rucker. He is Tyler Rucker at Tyler_Rucker. I am Tyler Metcalf. You can follow me at TMetcalf11. You can find all of our stuff at NoCeilingsNBA.com. Friday or tomorrow or whenever you're listening to this, I will have a piece up on Tristan Da Silva and why he is a very good basketball player. That one is free. Go check it out. We got some awesome stuff in the works all week, all next week. Maxwell is working on a massive tournament preview I believe that's coming out on Monday. So make sure to go check that out at NoCeilingsNBA.com. You can follow us across all socials at NoCeilingsNBA. But thank you for everyone in the chat. This was a blast as always. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to subscribe, leave a review, and a 5-star rating. Until next time, see ya.